Listen to more news from WBEZ anytime on the WBEZ app. Start each day informed. Tap and listen live or on demand. Available on iOS and Android.
I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. We're taking you back to a moment in legislative history that changed the lives of many of our family members, our neighbors, and our friends. The year was 1990. The day was July 26th, when then-President George H.W. Bush signed the Americans with Disabilities Act into law.
The ADA is a dramatic renewal, not only for those with disabilities, but for all of us, because along with the precious privilege of being an American comes a sacred duty to ensure that every other American's rights are also guaranteed. And together, we must remove the physical barriers we have created and the social barriers that we've accepted. For ours will never be a truly prosperous nation until all within it prosper.
The ADA might have officially kicked open the doors for people with disabilities 35 years ago, but disability rights activism, well, it didn't start there. And the fight continues. I mean, look around us, right here in Chicago. There are still L stops that don't have elevators. So we've put together a great panel for you. They'll demonstrate the power of advocacy before the ADA was signed, walk us through efforts from the White House to weaken the law today, and share how local advocates are pushing back against these threats. At the table, we had Charles Petrov, senior ADA attorney with Access Living, TJ Gordon, co-founder of Chicagoland Disabled People of Color Coalition, and Mike Irvin, writer and disability rights activist, joined us remotely. Charles started off with the basics.
The ADA is really a national statement that people with disabilities have a right to live in our community along with everyone else in the community. Mm-hmm. And all of its details are really focused on achieving that sort of a vision. And it comes to us in a basic grand bargain. And that was that we wouldn't immediately become accessible. We were going to work towards this goal so that the costs to everyone involved would be as small as possible. And that means that even though we were passed 35 years ago, the ADA is still growing and still becoming a part of our society. And we are still working to truly make people with disabilities full partners with us in the rest of our community.
Yeah. If you had to describe what the early days of advocating for this law looked like, what would you say?
The modern disability rights movement really hinges on sit-ins that happened to get a law known as the 1973 Rehabilitation Act into actual practical enforcement. Because what happened was Congress passed an early law that said at least local and state governments have to be accessible to people with disabilities, and HEW, what basically at the time was HHS, has to set out these regulations to explain how to do it. And HEW didn't know what to do. They sat on this thing, and people with disabilities finally looked at each other and said, we're going to make this happen. They began sit-ins in federal offices, and they got enough attention that they finally forced the government to put forward those regulations. Now, while those regulations were small in focus, they really were dealing primarily with local and city governments.
Right.
They're the foundation that the ADA was built on. And they're that movement, that's the foundation where people with disabilities got together and they said, we can make the change that we see necessary in our society. And it's also kind of the beginning of the larger understanding that this is a larger communal project. This isn't just a small group of people dealing with their own little thing. This is about our whole society. And we're all at some point going to touch on this. We're going to have strollers. Yeah, strollers are going to need to go into those buildings. And if you're pushing a stroller up a ramp into a building, you can thank that community of people with disabilities that ramp got there.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I'm a mom of two, so I pushed a double stroller up those ramps. So I totally get the importance here. TJ, you are, as I mentioned, with the Chicagoland Disabled People of Color Coalition. Talk to me about what you all do.
So the Chicagoland Disabled People of Color Coalition, which is housed in UIC's UIC's Institute on Disability and Human Development, where in that department we do a lot of not only research but also dissemination of information, as well as celebrating disability culture too in that department. But with Chicagoland BIPOC in particular, we are a group of BIPOC disabled folks in the Chicagoland area that promotes disability pride, disability inclusion, mm-hmm. and disability acceptance in Black, Brown, and other marginalized communities throughout the Chicagoland area. And in fact, we pride ourselves in not only helping BIPOC disabled folks, but it is run by BIPOC disabled folks. And in fact, it is founded by myself, AJ Jen Pock. We both identify as disabled. We both identify as people of color. Yeah. So it's
for us, by us.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. When did your advocacy start, TJ?
Whew. So my advocacy started in college, actually.
Yeah. What was happening?
I was growing up. But what I mean by growing up is I was at a period in my life going into college where I always knew that I was autistic, but I had wanted to hide it because if I show that I'm autistic, then I could get picked on. I could be even killed depending on where I'm at in Chicago or anywhere. I could be disenfranchised especially. So I had to pretty much force myself to blend in with everybody else. But once I got into spaces where there's not only disability resources, but I am told it's okay to be a disabled person living and thriving mm-hmm. and connect with other people like me, that's when I started to soak in disability rights history and disability culture. And slowly but surely, from joining campaigns to writing about it mm-hmm. through my blog, The Black Autist, where I talk about my Blackness and disability, to the advocacy work that I've been doing in Chicago since 2015. I think because of just having access to everything disability related and the fact that it is okay and proud to be disabled, that I'm able to advocate for myself and others.
That's wonderful. Mike Irvin, you're with us. You're a writer and disability rights activist yourself. I know that your memories go way back. We're talking about, you know, the days even before the ADA was signed into law and the Capitol crawl. I hear you were there, and I want you to sort of talk us through that. What do you remember?
I think that we will call that he's an OG.
Yeah, I remember people talking about it the night before and thinking it was a bad idea, and I'm delighted I was wrong about that. I thought that it could be taken the wrong way by the press. It could be looked upon as those poor, pathetic people. And besides, there was an elevator. We could get up there. Mm. It was all symbolic, but it didn't work out that way, so I'm glad.
And so we have everyone on the same page, Mike. The Capitol crawl is as it's known, as I mentioned. It was a physical demonstration, basically, of how inaccessible architecture, how it impacts people with disabilities. And this was done down at the White House, right? March from the White House to the Capitol, rather. And this was down at the Capitol steps.
It was part of a rally. I belong to the group ADAPT, and ADAPT is known for doing civil disobedience and for, as they say, not taking no for an answer. And we were down there lobbying just before the ADA was signed to try and push it over the top. And several people decided the night before that after the rally was over that they would take their wheelchairs to the bottom of the stairs that used to be the only entrance into the Capitol mm-hmm. and crawl up the stairs and get to the top just to demonstrate the barriers that are in the way and the things that are in the way and the unnecessary things that are in the way. And I was there. I didn't crawl because it was too physically risky for me, but I did sit at the top and cheer people on, which wow. is what you did if you couldn't crawl.
Of course.
I didn't think I could crawl up the steps. So.
But what a powerful moment that must have been.
Yeah, it was. When it was unfolding, I thought, well, this is not working as poorly as I thought it would, and it has endured. It's the moment people most remember. So that's why I'm glad I was wrong about that.
Yeah.
And also, a few months later, it was signed, and I was there for that, too, when it was signed. I was on the lawn of the White House.
Wow, Mike. Charles, Mike is, you're smiling as Mike recounts those days at the demonstration, but talk more about that and the challenges that folks were facing at the time.
So, yeah, that's an important historical moment.
Yeah, it sounds like a huge statement being made right there on the steps.
And Mike is a very clever individual, and I'm just enjoying him saying that he was wrong about something. So
does that not usually happen?
Oh, he's usually right. But I'll take that with me and just put in context that, you know, the Rehabilitation Act offered a little bit of greater accessibility for people with disabilities. And then the decision was made to actually join the full society and didn't need that additional step that actually reached to places where all of us go on a regular basis. And it was a real push. Like, that was a major legislative push.
And we're talking about 1973 here.
Well, the 73 was the Rehabilitation Act, but we're talking the lead into the 1990s signing. That was still like a major change in American society. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the community did an amazing job organizing this. There were allies who came in. Chicago's Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. has a role in the negotiation leading into this. But, you know, they just couldn't get it over the finish line. They just couldn't get the last holdouts in Congress to accept this idea. And it was that capital crawl that finally turned the nation's attention in such a way that people said, yeah, this makes sense. Like, why aren't we doing this?
Yeah. How has the ADA been enforced, Charles, since then?
So the ADA is a grand bargain, and a lot of its enforcement is really not enforcement. It's just pointing out to people, hey, this is the impact of putting a ramp at the front of your business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, one of the old jokes is businesses with stairs say, well, I don't ever have people here who use wheelchairs. Why do I need a ramp? And the reality is they can't get in. That's why you don't have anyone with a wheelchair. They just can't get in. Once businesses saw the community they were excluding, many of them said, yeah, tell us how to do this right. We want these customers.
Right.
You know, we want to sell tickets to this group to come to our show, because why would we not want them in the show? We're a normal part of our society. But, you know, getting that last step, making that public demonstration, that is what kind of like finally brought us to this moment that we have begun the rest of the journey.
Yeah.
And you know, the CTA, for example, has been doing great work to try to expand accessibility, but they're still decades off from planning to finally make all of our stations accessible.
I want to pick things up right where you were taking us there, Charles. The fact that there's still work to be done.
Decades worth of work is still in front of us.
And here in Chicago specifically, I mean, what comes to mind for you, TJ, when you think about what you see around our city that still needs a tweak or two?
Well, I'm glad Charles mentioned about CTA. One of them, of course, is can we make all the stops in on the CTAL system accessible? And let's do the same for Metro as well.
Mm-hmm.
But also, remember the period called the COVID-19 pandemic, where it was more public transportation than ever before because a lot of people didn't go outside as much.
Mm-hmm.
And now also during that time, some cities like Chicago have enforced basically a bus or train capacity limit, which actually I think as a person who's developing more physical disabilities could benefit from, because the less crowds means the less sensory overload you have to deal with. And also, it cuts down on the sickness as well.
Right.
I think as far as accessibility, Chicago has to do a better job at not only looking at the physical part of accessibility, but also think of people with chronic illnesses, those who are autistic or neurodivergent, like myself, those who have many other types of disabilities we rarely talk about. We want to make sure that all the places that we could go, there are many accessible and inclusive options we could have at our disposal.
We can all benefit from these spaces, right?
Exactly.
Mike, what would you like to add here? What do you notice? I mean, I know that, for instance, you notice the elevators or the lack thereof, I should say, at L stations. Anything else you think needs work here in Chicago?
Well, when I look out my window, I live in the Printers Row neighborhood, which is the south loop near the Harold Washington Library. And when I look out my window, I can see the good of the ADA when a CTA bus goes past. And I remember when none of them were accessible, and none of them, and all of them are now. And I just see one roll by, and I think, oh, yeah, the things have gotten a lot better. But then the good thing about this neighborhood is that you live near a lot of train lines, but both the blue line and the red line, the closest stop to me does not have an elevator. I'm referring to LaSalle and on the blue line and Harrison on the red line.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have elevators. And so I'm reminded that we still have a long way to go. And when I was sitting there on that lawn that day, I never would have thought that 35 years later, we'd still be talking about that. I'd still be still not able to get on my L stop 35 years later.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. That's an excellent point, Charles. I come back to you because I think of, you know, what better enforcement could look like today in our city. Meanwhile, in the backdrop, things are happening in Washington, right? In March, we know that President Trump withdrew 11 pieces of the guidance.
Ooh.
Thank you, TJ, for the sound effects.
That is how TJ feels about, the fact that he withdrew 11 pieces of guidance just related to the Americans with Disabilities Act that helped stores, hotels, and other businesses understand how they were obligated to this law.
Yes, and that's just one piece, one brick in the wall that's being removed. Again,
like, was that a change that needed to be made? Why was President Trump dipping into accessibility in that way?
That change doesn't make sense to me, because guidance is really an explanation just to make it easier to comply. It's not an additional obligation. It's just an explanation so that you are not as challenged figuring out what's the right thing to do.
Here's what the U.S. Deputy Assistant Attorney General Mac Warner said. Quote, "We're putting money back into the pockets of all business owners. It helps everyone by allowing those businesses to pass on cost savings to consumers and bolster the economy."
From my perspective, this costs businesses because it makes it harder for them to actually know how to avoid enforcement through such things as my tools, which are lawsuits. And lawsuits are really not the major way the ADA advances. They're a small part of that process. But there's sort of like, you know, a speed camera in front of the park. It keeps you from speeding on every street because you recognize that you're being reminded there's an obligation that you're interested in complying with. But the guidance removal is just part of what's happening right now. 17 states have sued the federal government, in part asking to find that the Rehabilitation Act, the foundation of the ADA, be declared unconstitutional. The Department of Justice has backed off on enforcing the Americans with Disabilities Act. So we're losing that warning to people that they really should pay attention to this. And the federal government has also withdrawn Department of Energy regulations that are specific to the building requirements for new buildings. Just that idea, the ramp.
Yeah.
The ramp requirement, the Department of Energy is trying to withdraw that regulatory requirement.
And don't forget also, because of the proposed and, I guess, push to dismantle Department of Education, that also impacts not only accessibility of schools, but also inclusion and even some of the work on the research side that we do to not only pass along the information about ADA in the educational realm, mm-hmm. but also giving people with disabilities the opportunity to thrive in schools in all levels. Granted, I know we're talking more IDEA, but it still ties to the ADA as far as having the ability to get into the schooling your dreams and thrive with accommodations.
Mm. Mike, your thoughts here on framing ADA guidance as something that is impacting our cost of living?
Well, like TJ says, there's all kinds of things that, getting back to the previous question, that Trump was doing. There's all kinds of things that affect other laws, but they all fit into this discussion because they go back to their intent of those laws, as the ADA is to improve the lives of folks with disabilities and in to robustly improve everybody's life. And that have to do with the sub-minimum wage that disabled folks should pay, that have to do with the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, and how airlines are supposed to treat folks with disabilities. All that stuff has either been withdrawn or not enforced by Trump. And what that shows, I think it shows what we all knew all along, which was this whole MAGA mentality of, we don't like anybody who's not us. Well, that includes us, I guess, even though they don't come out and say it. Why wouldn't it include us? Because we're different from all of them. And I think they pose it as us versus them as a zero-sum game, to where our game is necessarily everybody else's loss. And as Charlie said, that's not necessarily the case. It's why not? Yeah, it may. I want to hear about businesses going down because of the extra burdens, quote unquote, of these laws. Mm-hmm. First of all, I don't know of any. And secondly, I think of the ones that have happened as a result. Like, for instance, the people who used to make inaccessible buses, maybe they can't make inaccessible buses anymore. But the ones that making accessible buses have had their business boosted by the ADA.
Yeah.
So at best at all, if there's any impact at all, which I question in the first place, I'd like to see evidence of that.
Yeah.
I think it's canceled out by the gains of it.
So TJ, I'm almost out of time, but I want to hear from you here, just thinking of the work that you and your coalition are doing. How can disability communities continue the fight? What's your quick advice here?
I'll say the quick advice I could give from a small level. I wish I was Charles where I could give legal advice, but law is not my strong suit. I wish I had the knowledge of Mike, who he's like a walking historian and a veteran. But as a younger person in the fight, hear our stories and take our stories seriously, mm-hmm. especially if the voices are coming from multiply marginalized communities, because don't forget, ADA affects everyone, especially in communities that are already facing a lot of pushback.
Yeah.
Whether it's because of the current administration or discriminations that happened way before then. So it is important to hear all of our stories,
yeah.
so that A, you'll understand what we're going through, and B, you will learn how to support us, mm-hmm. and how to join the fight.
We'll leave it there. TJ Gordon's a co-founder of Chicagoland Disabled People of Color Coalition, Charles Petrov, senior ADA attorney with Access Living, and Mike Irvin, writer and disability rights activist. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Micah Yasin. It was edited by Dan Tucker. Want more Reset on the go? Well, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast and checking back often, because we bring you new episodes every weekday morning and afternoon, with a bonus episode on Saturdays. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again later today.